I know, I feel very formal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Spilling Eve, a podcast where we gush over this amazing show that I'm obsessed with. And sometimes we drink beverages. Guys, I have lofty dreams of, I don't know, like building craft beverages that go with episodes. That's clearly not happening yet, but we are having some delightful sparkling grapefruit water.
Yeah.
Which is great. And my guest today, whose dulcet tones you just heard, is the incredible actor, writer, comedian, singer, Adele Marie Dix.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Adele, I will let you give some of your credits and some of your background. Adele is my comedy partner and writing partner. We've worked together for a long time and we've known each other even longer. We went to high school together.
It's true.
So we
all the way in New Brunswick.
We know all the dirt on each other. So why don't you just tell the listeners a little about yourself? What's your deal?
Oh, what is my deal? Similarly to Christy, though we did go to high school together, we then separated for different schools.
It was so heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking until like 2 years later when it was exactly the same.
But yep.
Better. Moved to Toronto to pursue that great dream of musical theater.
Ah, yeah, such a realistic goal.
Thinking that'll be easy and then maybe I'll be into acting a little bit. I don't know, but probably going to be on Broadway. And very quickly realized nobody wants to hear a soprano anymore. They just don't like that. They like rock musicals.
Yeah, you need to be able to belt.
You need to be able to belt, and that is not my strongest point. Christy and I started doing some videos, getting more into acting, on camera classes, took some classes at Second City, mm-hmm. pursued that, got into sketch comedy, we did musical comedy.
Yeah, we started a comedy duo called Hot Cousin.
Indeed.
Which was mostly musical comedy that we wrote and performed together because we have this musical theater background and we're like, we better be using our singing for something.
Yeah.
But also we did a Gilmore Girls themed improv show for years called Gilmore Girlprov that got us a lot more attention and press than pretty much anything else we've done.
It was the most successful thing we've ever done. And we got the front of the entertainment section in the Star.
It was really just, Vice came and like did videos at our show. And it was just us. It's the most like fan fiction-y thing we've ever done. It's just us pretending to be Rory and Lorelai. Like,
yeah.
It's very funny that was that happened to hit.
It's also I think of all the things we've worked on, we put the least effort into that. We literally just made up words on stage and people loved it for a while. So I guess my trajectory has been interesting and now I consider myself an actor, writer, comedian. And I love to sing, but don't know where to use that talent.
We'll get it in somewhere.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Well, thanks so much for coming and being on the show.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Oh. I love to watch TV in your basement, so it really wasn't much of a stretch.
Gosh, me too. Okay, so let's get into it. Today's episode is episode 3 of both Spilling Eve and Killing Eve. Episode 3 is entitled Don't I Know You? And this one was written by Vicky Jones. So she was also a script editor for Crashing and for Fleabag, which are both of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's previous shows, which is really interesting. So I'm not sure. Maybe I should have done more research. I'm not quite sure what a script editor means within the like British TV context, but maybe I'll ask our next guest, Ian McIntyre, TV writer. I'm pretty sure that means you're usually in the writer's room and you're one of the contributing writers. You're just not necessarily at the grade where you're getting your own script and getting that credit. And then it was directed by John East, who has directed 3 of the episodes in this season, which is quite a lot considering there's only 8 episodes. Hmm. So let's get into it.
Okay.
We just watched it.
We did.
This one is a doozy.
It's a really important episode.
Totally. It's also interesting because I believe this is the first one that another writer is actually credited as the writer on.
Hmm.
And I did find that I missed a little bit of that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, like banter, joke. It didn't feel as funny.
It's not as funny. And I think that's very smart for what happens in this episode. I wrote down in my notes, this episode is not fucking around.
Yeah, that's a really succinct way of putting it. So we open up and Eve is describing Villanelle to a reconstruction artist person, and she's just giving this like vivid, really intimate description of her, and we're really tight on Sandra Oh's face, and she's explaining
her beautiful, beautiful face.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. And we're not sure, like, oh, she's trying to remember everything from the hospital and that she knows about her. And we just hear this like glorious description, and then it cuts to the guy, and he's like, so is that a square face or an oval face? Like, he's not taking any of it in, which is fun and funny. And it's so nice to like start this episode on a joke at least. So we're like, okay, we know what this show is. It's not going to go like super dramatic out of nowhere. And then we cut to this businessman who we find out later is John Woo, also known as Fat Panda. And he is making a call and saying he has to see a doctor. And then it cuts very quickly to him at this doctor's office. And really fast, we kind of put together that this is some sort of like BDSM situation.
It's a front.
Yeah, it's not a real hospital. It's a little sexier. Which is interesting because we don't really know where that's going or how that ties in until he finds out his favorite dominatrix is not there and it's his birthday and he wanted a special. I don't know. This does not appeal to me.
Hey,
so.
But don't you hate it when you're expecting something on your birthday?
You know what?
And then you can't have it.
That I can relate to. Adele and I are both tend to be big birthday people. So I do understand.
I empathize.
Well, I mean... In that way, yes. That's
not
a very
so much
good
with
way.
The clamping of my scrotum, but
yeah, I've never tried that myself. So he gets into what is like clearly set up as this sort of themed doctor's office torture dungeon, and the nurse who's the dom is Villanelle. Mm-hmm. We're like, haha, she's got this weird wig on, and I feel like it's sort of the dorkiest she's looked yet. Like, it's not, I don't find it very, like, attractive, and usually she looks so pretty.
I thought it was attractive. I liked that color on her.
I felt like she looked like kind of like a middle school substitute teacher or something, just very, like, wholesome.
Well, she is the substitute nurse.
Ah, indeed she is. And so right away, she clamps his balls, and it kind of seems like she might be castrating him because she won't stop. He uses a safe word, and she's just like, haha, I don't care, and puts a mask over his face and clearly starts killing him with some kind of gas, which is intense. And then she does this classic thing she loves to do where she stares into his eyes and watch the life drain from his face.
She really does love that.
She really, really does. And it's intense, and then he's dead, and that scene is over. So it's a really bold, strong way to start this episode. We've got another kill in. It's another very like creative one, and then we cut back to Eve, and Eve and Nico are together, and they're bantering about eggs.
Eggs that their chicken has.
Yeah, they have a hen for some reason. I don't know.
Did they have that in earlier episodes?
I don't remember any context for this. It seems so random.
Or is he just like this cool teacher, maybe?
I don't know. We'll get to that in a second because he says something about like a parent teacher conference. But earlier, I thought he ran that like casino bingo hall recreation center. So I don't really get what his deal is. It doesn't super matter for the plot of this show, but they're joking back and forth, and it leads to some really like witty banter about, are the eggs safe to eat, while Eve is talking about this trip she's going on, and he's asking like, is the trip safe?
Yeah.
And she keeps maybe willfully misunderstanding and being like, no, the eggs are safe. Or are they dangerous? I don't know.
She's, like, constantly deflecting in that relationship.
Totally.
I have a lot of issues with that relationship.
Oh, we'll get into them. Right. I'm not a fan of Nico's, as I've mentioned before. You said you don't mind him so much.
I don't mind him. I think they have... I just don't understand their communication at this after being together for this long. But we can get back to that.
I'm sure we will. Then Eve is with Bill. And they're discussing on the phone the asthma kill from the last episode. So Villanelle had poisoned the perfume and, again, watched a woman die and, like, choke to death in front of her. And Eve gets into the office, and the team basically tells her about this John Woo kill that we've seen from the beginning of the episode. And she's like, okay, yep, let's go figure it out. And they're all being a little cagey and a little weird.
Yeah.
and you can tell something's up, and then they sort of drop the bombshell that Villanelle used Eve's name. When she signed into this place, she gave the name Eve Pilastri, her full name.
She did.
Which is pretty ballsy.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm here to fuck with you.
And I want to get your attention. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something that says, like, I want you to know this. And I want to, like, be in communication with you, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Which is terrifying. But it doesn't seem to throw Eve that much. Like, she's a little taken aback, but then she kind of just gets right back into it. It's like, mm-hmm, she's almost prepared for that.
I think so much of it is Eve trying to be like, oh, that's fine, because Eve knows that she feels very weirdly connected to Villanelle, but she doesn't want to talk about that.
Yes.
So instead it's easier just to be like, oh, weird.
Oh, whatever. Well,
I guess let's go to Berlin.
Right. And they're also talking about who gets to go to Berlin. And Elena's like, I want to go on a trip, because she's always game and I love it. And I feel like I'd be friends with her.
Yeah.
We probably both would. We'd hang out all the time.
She doesn't get to do very many fun things.
No, not as much as she should. But then they say, no, it makes more sense for Bill to go with you because he speaks German and he lived there and has all these contacts. And Bill happens to have his baby with him at the office because there was a babysitter thing, and he's just sort of throwing his baby up and down, being like, daddy's gonna die, ha 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 ha. And Eve doesn't like that. It's like, Bill, come on. And he's like, I'm kidding, what's the big deal?
Dun dun dun, foreshadowing.
Yeah, let's just say, if you haven't watched this whole series yet, please go watch this series. There will be spoilers throughout this entire podcast. I try to say that every time, but I can't say it enough.
Yeah.
So that's intense. And then we cut back to Villanelle. And Villanelle is in Berlin, post-hit. She's feeling top of the world. She's done what she was there to do. And she's there with this American tourist woman who has, of course, like, flowy brown, curly-ish hair.
Very interesting.
And she is... Very quickly, we realize she is, like, role-playing with her, pretending she's Eve. And then she very quickly says, like, I'm gonna call you Eve. Wear your hair down.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman is so, like, thrown off and is like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, my husband doesn't know I'm here. Like, thinking she's having this fun affair.
That actor's very good, by the way.
He's great. They make out a little bit. It's a little sexy. And we mm-hmm. kind of see, like, okay, this Villanelle is, like, more than just, like, intrigued by Eve. She definitely has some kind of, like, obsession, fascination with her.
Yeah.
Like, it's going beyond just, oh, that's someone I'm gonna kill.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because in the next episode, we meet an ex of Villanelle's, and we get a little insight into how she feels about people she's been with before. Mm-hmm. Women she's been with, specifically. Then we're back, and Eve is packing.
I have a question. This is my main question from her packing.
Oh, good.
I want to know, how tall is Sandra Oh? Mm. And how tall is that cabinet? Because even when Nico goes over to help her get her luggage down from this cabinet, it's, like, pretty hard for him to get.
Maybe we can ask our producer, Chris, to look up Sandra Oh's height. I feel like he's already doing it.
I feel like she's pretty short.
I assume she's, like, my height, because I always think actors are my height.
Well, they often are.
Yeah. I'm short, by the way, in case you can't tell from this voice.
I'm not, but I know you could tell.
She's 5'5" So okay. That is, she's a little taller than
How me. Tall is the guy who plays Nico?
Oh, it's good. That might take a little longer.
We can come back to it.
That's really funny.
But that cabinet was, like, very tall.
Comically tall, I'd say. Which maybe was part of it. Like, maybe that was intentional for a funny visual or an Perhaps. Interesting visual. Maybe there's a deep meaning. Maybe not.
Probably not.
Maybe they're just tall cabinets in England. I don't know. But yeah, she's packing, and Nico is back early from, this is where we find out maybe he's a teacher, because he says something about a parents' meeting.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just lied and said all the kids were good so I could come back to you. Which, that was one of the first lines where I kind of liked Nico, because I was like, oh, that's cute and romantic, mm-hmm. and I would like it if someone said that to me. But then I was like, is he a teacher?
Yeah.
What does this guy do? Killing Eve fandom. Please let me know. Maybe I just missed something.
I don't remember. Like, I cannot remember. But you've been watching them recently.
I know.
So, very weird. What did I say about that? Oh, yeah. So, this is where they start communicating about you know, she's trying to say like, oh, I have to go to work. Oh, it's the worst. I have to travel. Oh, I hate it. And he's like, yeah, you hate it. You hate it. And so neither of them are saying what they want to say. And of course this happens in relationships, but they have been together a long time from what she says later on in the show and are married.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm like, do you not communicate? Like, is he really not aware that you like this kind of crime that you're involved with, even though it's your job that you do enjoy that aspect of it?
The danger of it.
Like, could he really not know that? And do you really not talk about that?
It's interesting because I feel like, I mean, we know from the get-go that, like, he is very worried about her being part of MI6 and being a spy and not just being, like, kind of behind a desk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not really happy with it. And she is so thrilled and so excited and so all in, even though she's nervous too and knows she's a little out of her element.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's just one of those things where it's, like, just an unspoken thing between the two of them. But then we also, as this episode goes on, we get this feeling of sort of like distrust between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like him feeling, it feels like if one person in a relationship thought the other was cheating.
Yeah.
And we get that really uncomfortable feeling. And the way she is answering him is very like quick and clipped and disingenuous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird scene. Something I also didn't notice in this scene before and rewatching it, I was like, oh my gosh, is he is the one who tells her again and again to label her suitcase and put her address on it because she lost her last suitcase traveling.
Mm.
So everything that like unfolds after this
is a result
partly
of
because of him like nagging her to put her address on her thing.
Nico.
Like that's a lot. It was really interesting to go back and see that. Not that she might not have had her address on it anyway, but it's very interesting that his insistence sort mm-hmm. of leads to what is to come.
Yeah. It's like by trying to protect her, they're actually giving away too much, which can be true of a lot of things. And like a lot of those kind of luggage tags, whatever you're trying to do, this belongs to this person when you lose something. But then people find out something about you.
Totally.
A stranger, perhaps.
Yeah. And at the end of that scene, they make out a little bit, which is very interesting to kind of in light of them not communicating. It's like they both know they're not really on the same page, but they still love each other and they still want to be connected.
Yes, and the other thing I take from that makeout is she is holding something back from him and he knows it. She's not being honest with him about how she actually feels about going to do these missions. And I feel like he then ends the kiss and walks away from her very abruptly. And I feel like he's like, I can withhold things too.
Ooh, so you feel like it's kind of a power.
I do. Power move. Oh, yeah. Even the way he walks away is very like...
See, I think I'm so, like, ugh about him that I don't read into it
that
much. Oh,
no. There's a lot of tension there, even in that, the way he stops kissing her. Because I think she thinks they're about to have sex. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it reads. That's not what
not happens. Not in his mind. So then we leave this marital strife, and we're in Berlin. And we're seeing Eve and Bill pulling up to the scene of the crime. And they're chatting a little bit. They get out. They go in and see where the hit took place, where Villanelle did it. The guy who's there, who I think is like an attaché from the Chinese government, it seems like, is sort of like cagey and not really giving information
mm-hmm.
and kind of joking around with Bill because they're old friends from the good old days. And Eve is clearly just very frustrated. She yeah. wants answers. She knows that it's weird that like they're not being really upfront.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of like, okay, let's move on. Meanwhile, we're also watching Villanelle watching them. So from the moment they pull up, Villanelle is there. She is clocking the whole thing. She's watching mm-hmm. them interact. She's like so fixed on Eve. And it ends with Villanelle stealing Eve's suitcase.
Yeah. I have a question.
Hit me.
Because later, not to jump forward, but I'm going to jump forward. Right. Later, Villanelle is watching them or like listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
Does it show her bugging the room?
No. So that's interesting. I thought the same thing. It doesn't show that. I thought maybe she had put something in that belt when Eve gets clothes maybe. And Villanelle like suggests sending a belt over to like complete the outfit. Thought maybe she had put something in that, like some kind of bug. Because that I think is the only thing that I saw her be in contact with that then was in Eve's possession instead of the opposite, her taking Eve's things. But it's also possible she just bugged the room earlier because she's a very good assassin.
She sure is.
She's great at what she does. So, yeah. So she, Eve's suitcase is stolen and she's just annoyed and it's like, ah, Nico's going to be mad again because I keep losing suitcases. Mm-hmm. And we see Villanelle going through Eve's things at her place, just kind of like looking. She's like being condescending about the travel toothpaste and stuff. It's so weird.
It's not travel toothpaste. It's Kinestin.
Oh, that is hilarious. That makes a lot more sense.
That's why she's like, poor baby.
That makes a million times more sense. I was like, who cares? What is this?
No, it's for yeast infection.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That makes... I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't know.
What is Kinestin? Never heard of it. And then Constantine is there and he basically tells her like, what are you still doing here?
Because her job is over.
You did your job. I booked you in this hotel for one night only. Are you having a fun vacation? He's kind of like, and she's like, yeah, I am. I like it. I like the city. Ha ha ha. There's nothing wrong. And he comments on the clothes that they don't really look like her style. And she obviously shouldn't be doing everything she's doing with Eve. So she just kind of like brushes it off. Mm-hmm. And he basically just tells her like, you need to leave. You need to get home.
And he tells her that Eve is there.
Yes, yes. Looking into Villanelle's work.
Yeah.
And Villanelle's like, oh, is she? Weird. And then Constantine leaves, or is about to leave, and the woman, the American tourist hookup
wonderful
woman
actor,
comes back. And she's like, oh, who is this? Is this part of it? Like, so sweet and naive, and almost introduces herself as Eve, because she knows that's the thing, and Villanelle cuts her off right before. And Constantine leaves, and then the woman asks, like, oh, are those clothes for me? And Villanelle's like, yeah. So she's obviously going to have this woman, like, dress up in Eve's real clothes.
Ha-ha.
So creepy.
Very creepy.
So funny. Really, really intense.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, the government, the Chinese government is saying that this hit was a heart attack, and that's why that guy died. And that's the official, like, party line. And Eve is not having it. So she gets old Kenny face down to, like, hunt down over the internet where this government official is so they can go find him and get the real story. And he's kind of impressed that they found him, but he's also being a little cagey and says he can't tell them really anything until they get clearance, which is going to be 6 months at least. Mm-hmm. He's just totally blowing them off. It's funny. That scene was really interesting with Bill and Eve, and Bill says something really awkward and they both kind of like look at him weird. And there's just mm-hmm. a lot of sort of like very real moments in that conversation. And then he asks Eve out. This guy basically asks Eve out on a date.
He's super into her.
And he's a little creepy and very forward, but she wants to know what she wants to know. So she's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And she goes dress shopping because all of her clothes have been stolen. So she's buying this really nice dress, trying it on. She feels like it doesn't really look right, which is when Villanelle mm-hmm. sends over a belt to like complete the look.
As she's spying on her.
Yeah. And Eve loves it. Not knowing it's from her, you know, mm-hmm. nemesis. And so then that's it. They're going to go Eve's going to go on this date and hopefully learn information. She Skypes with Nico and there's some event going on. Could you tell what that event was? That
I feel like it was just like a dinner party.
Yeah.
It just looked like a dinner party with friends that she was also supposed to be at.
And we see more of that disconnect and the communication being weird and him asking if it's Bill knocking and her saying yes, even though it is, it seems like a lie.
Yeah.
And he notices the fancy new dress and it's just a very like uncomfortable interaction.
He's like jokingly asking if she's having an affair with Bill, but he's not really joking, but she's really not, but something's going on.
Yeah, it's just one of those, I think everyone can relate, whether it's a partner or a friend or whatever, to those conversations you have where you're not being upfront with someone and they're not being upfront with you, and mm-hmm. you just know like this is a surface conversation, but neither of us is actually being honest.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
Yeah.
It made me, like, cringe to kind of, like, feel that.
Yeah.
And then Bill is dropping her off at the subway to go to this date. And he notices Villanelle wearing the scarf, because in all of Eve's things was this green scarf that Nico gave her. And she was saying that's really the only thing she is sad about losing. She hates all her clothes. And Villanelle's wearing it. And so we still see Villanelle sort of clocking Eve about to get on the subway. And Bill goes up to her and is like, oh, that's in German. It's like, that's a nice scarf. Did we skip something?
Oh, I just want to say that we do see Villanelle intentionally bumps into Bill earlier in the episode as well on the street.
Yes.
And then looks back, but like looks back in a way where she's pretending that she hasn't seen him. Mm-hmm. But he clocks her, and then her face as she turns realizes, like, she did that intentionally.
He makes eye contact with her earlier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then they have this weird exchange. They're both speaking in German. He asks about the scarf. She says it's, like, from her mother's boutique or something. They just have this sort of, like, awkward interaction. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Eve having this terrible dinner date with this guy who's just being so obnoxious and so, like,
he's
overt.
He's, like, dorky creepy.
Yeah.
So it's less creepy because you're like, I'm not afraid of you, but you're so gross and so annoying.
Yeah. And earlier before this, Bill had sort of said to Eve, like, he wants to sleep with you.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, whatever. And he's like, obviously that's what he wants.
Yeah.
And it is obvious and it's uncomfortable. And she's kind of like, okay, give me the information. And he keeps like flirting and being like, we got to drink wine first. Ha ha ha.
There's also a theme I noticed that I didn't notice the first time I watched it of Eve's character. Well, Sandra Oh's character, Eve, is feeling like she often does things or says things that make it seem that she does not think she is desirable or beautiful.
Totally.
Which is very interesting.
Her and Bill have this conversation where they're kind of talking about, like, have you ever been attracted to me? Have you ever been attracted to me? And they both say no. Mm-hmm. And she seems almost a little disappointed by it, even though she's not attracted to him. And we find out in that exchange a little bit about Bill's past and that he...
And his sexuality.
Yeah, he has this beautiful quote. I'll bring it up in my favorite lines, even though it wasn't a funny line. And usually those are my favorite. It's just so beautiful about how he's like pansexual and has been with men and women. And she asks, like, how many men have you been in love with? He's like, hundreds.
Yeah.
And his marriage... his partner he has his daughter with, he's like, yeah, it's because we wanted a kid. It's not because I'm in love with a woman. Mm-hmm. And Eve is so taken aback and thinks they're such a perfect couple. So we get such an insight into his life.
Yep.
But you're right. At the same time, we see Eve sort of feeling undesired.
And when she's talking to Nico, Nico's like, what does he say? He says something like, you look beautiful or something like that. And she's like, oh, I doubt it.
Which is very unbelievable for me because Sandra Oh is so beautiful.
Yeah,
but adds such an interesting complexity to this character.
Yeah. And for her to be like, oh, whatever. He doesn't want, like, that's not where her head goes.
And what a good, like, thing to put against Villanelle, who clearly thinks she is the most desirable person in the universe and indulges in that constantly throughout this series.
And is obsessed with Eve, so that must make Eve feel so good, and that explains some of their weird connection. And
totally.
Anyway.
Totally. So the dinner is just, like, terrible, and it's going on, and Eve is, like, trying to throw away the flirting and trying to just get information. And meanwhile, Bill is trailing Villanelle. And he calls Eve and is like, I think maybe this is her. And he's following her around. And we cut back and forth a bit. And then we see Villanelle get into a nightclub. And she sort of, like, sweet talks a bouncer to get in and, like, skip this massive lineup. And
she literally just looks him in the eye.
Yep.
And he gets, like, scared and lets her in.
Totally. Which is so interesting because, I mean, Jodie Comer as an actor has such an intensity, but she also, as Eve describes her earlier on, she does have, like, soft features and she is very beautiful. So I think the combination of that is something that this character uses to her advantage all the time. Mm-hmm. She has such a presence, but she's also so pleasant looking. And I think that's hard for people to resist or, like, say no to.
Yeah.
So she goes in and she kind of looks back towards Bill, and Bill tries to get in, and obviously he's not quite as cute as Villanelle, so he has to wait in the line.
He's calling Eve mm-hmm. while he's doing this.
Yes.
And Eve has had to ignore his calls a couple times. And then before we get to them both in the club, Eve gets something from...
Yes, like a USB drive, a thumb drive.
Yeah, but what is it exactly?
We don't know.
We don't know yet?
I don't think. But it's in this jewelry box, and it's so weird, and he keeps trying to, like, give her this jewelry box, the government official, and she's like, ugh, and she opens it up, and it's this thumb drive, and he's like, this is just a little something for you. So I assume when I saw that, like, oh, it's got to be some information
oh, yeah.
that she needs. And then Bill gets into the club, and he's looking around frantically, and the way this scene is shot is so good. Mm-hmm. And the first time I watched this, I was so overwhelmed and shocked. Massive spoilers ahead in case you haven't turned this podcast off.
Spoilers, spoilers on killing. Eve.
So he goes in. He can't find her. Eve
has left the date. Yep. Got the calls.
And is following after him and is worried. And so we see Villanelle making eye contact with Bill in this super busy, super crowded club. The music's loud. The lights are, like, wild. And they get super close to each other. And then just almost immediately, Villanelle just starts stabbing Bill.
Well, also, she looks at him. And as soon as she looks at him from a distance, he's like, oh, I am fucked. I have to get out of here. Yeah. And he starts running away.
Instead of continuing
He's not chasing her anymore. Yeah. He knows he's in for trouble.
Totally. And that it's a super dangerous situation.
Yeah.
Which
stabs him so casually.
Which it is.
She just
pulls him into her and stab. And he's dead. And it's so crowded and loud that no one notices. And no one is even aware that this is happening. And she can just sort of, like...
She, like, throws him to the bodies on the floor.
Just, like, slink out. And Eve finds him pretty much right away. Mm-hmm. It's such good dramatic tension for TV. Yeah. Because it's like, if you had been there 30 seconds earlier, a minute earlier.
But even if she had... I don't know that it would have changed anything.
But would Villanelle have been thrown because of Eve?
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know because we also don't know why is Villanelle killing Bill. That's not a hit that she's been assigned. That's not something she's supposed to do. In fact, that might be something she'll get in trouble for mm-hmm. because it only makes it more suspicious and it only brings her in more.
Well, I started thinking about this a little bit while we were watching the episode, and the way that Villanelle is with Eve reminds me a little bit of how Angel was with Buffy when he turns evil.
Oh, Angel, like bad Angel.
Bad Angel, mm-hmm. evil Angel. In season two, he doesn't try to kill Buffy. He still loves Buffy. He's still obsessed with her. But he starts, like, killing her friends, doing really messed up things mm-hmm. to get her attention. Mm. And I feel like it's like I can provoke her by killing him.
Interesting.
Because it doesn't really serve her to kill him.
No.
And she kind of plans the whole thing. Like, I don't think she ever intended to follow Eve.
Well, that's interesting. We have a question about that, so we can get into it.
I could be wrong.
A fan question. But yeah, that's how the episode ends, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's dead. And
this episode should have been called Kill Bill.
Oh, that's so good. It's so terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and it's so shocking. Watching this the first time... This is the third episode of the series. Up till now, we've understood that Bill is a secondary character in the show. We love him. He serves such an important role for Eve as this sort of counterbalance to her wildness. He's grounded. He's a little more serious. He's maybe a little more jaded. He's been at it longer. And he's a bit of her rock in that mm-hmm. way that, like, Miko really isn't right now. Bill and Eve have this connection that's just, like, very tender and very beautiful and very grounding, I think. And now that's gone. And I guess we don't know that he's dead when the episode ends, but it's pretty clear.
Oh, yeah. He's so dead.
And I was so shocked and so sad because I love their banter. I love their connection. And as soon as I realized that was going to be gone and no more of that would be on the show, I realized, like, oh, I think I love that even more.
Well, yeah.
Than I thought. I didn't think about it as much.
Well, I think it, when I wrote this episode's not fucking around. I think I was like, oh, this is very interesting because this is a point in the show where you figure out that it's a little bit of everything. Like, it is this lighthearted show where there's murder happening, but you can still laugh and it's interesting.
There's a lot of humor.
It's great for like true crime followers, but it's also great for people who just love, you know, comedy, drama, whatever. But this episode is like, oh no, actually really terrible things are going to happen.
Yeah. Like, this is characters a dark show.
You love. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, it is kind of a, I think it's a really interesting point in the series in an 8-episode season to throw that in and be like, hey, they're not waiting until the finale of season 1, 3 episodes in. They're like, we're going to kill a character you thought you loved.
Yeah.
He's not a character anymore. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Which is bold. Very, very bold.
But helps Eve's journey so much.
Of course.
Going
and
forward.
And it really, really, I think, motivates the trajectory to start going a little bit faster and getting a little more intensely dramatic. So that's it. Is there anything we missed plot-wise in this episode that you wanted to touch on?
I'm just looking at my notes. Da-da-da.
We're very thorough here at Biddy Spelling
Eve. I wrote Sandra Oh is the best. I wrote she elevates bad work and shines in good work. I wrote Kill Bill. I felt pretty good about that. But I do, the only thing that I want to say that we didn't miss, but I am surprised that he followed her like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure what he thought he was going to do.
Well, it's interesting because the first time I watched that, I was kind of like, what are you doing? Why don't you have backup? Because I get very mad in any show when people go into situations without backup. This happens on one of my other favorite shows, Law & Order SVU, constantly because they're all such like warriors for justice. They always put themselves in harm's way. And I'm sure with the adrenaline and in real life that happens all the time, but it's very frustrating as a viewer to be like, you could just call someone and then people will be on their way. And instead you're like slinking around a murderer's house. I kind of took it this time watching it because Germany was his home turf. And he talks a little bit about what a time it was in his life and how sort of reckless and free and wild he was there. I thought maybe there was some of that where he felt very comfortable and maybe he had a little bit of that nostalgia, revertigo, like, oh, in Germany, I'm this like wild guy with
and
no
I was
limits.
Young. Yeah. Not that would have saved him, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Let's talk about Sandra Oh for a minute, though. Because
forever.
She's the best. And I think that is bang on that when she is in projects that are just mediocre, she still shines. When she's in great work, she also shines equally. It's not like, oh, she just blends in and she's just good now. She stands out so well. So you're a Grey's Anatomy fan.
Yeah. I mean, till like season 5.
I mean, sure.
It's been on for like 15 years.
Were
I don't
you
know
a fan of hers from that show?
Oh, hell yes. I have not really seen her in a lot of other things, to be honest, other than The Princess Diaries.
Of course.
Hello. And Under the Tuscan Sun, where she's also the great best friend.
I don't think I've seen that movie.
I love Diane Lane in a way I can't really explain. Hey, that rhymed.
Producer Chris is doing poetry snaps over here.
So I've always loved her, but on Grey's Anatomy, and it's very interesting because Shonda Rhimes even says, like, her character...
Christina Yang.
Thank you.
I was like,
oh my gosh, what's her name?
I know that because I had a friend named Christina Yang. I don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
Interesting. Yeah. I had a friend too. It was Sandra Oh.
Okay.
She is so good and that character is so complex. And for all of the cheesiness, and especially as the show goes on, Grey's Anatomy, it gets more and more soap opera-y and not something I'm really a fan of. It didn't matter in terms of Sandra Oh and that character and what she could bring to it. And every time Shonda Rhimes would talk about Grey's Anatomy, it was all like, I think she feels like she is the Christina Yang, or like they are each other.
She talks about that
characters are muse.
In
like,
her book, in Shonda Rhimes' book, she goes on and on, not about the lead of the show, but about the character of Christina Yang. And it's really interesting.
Yeah, she's a wonderful, interesting woman, and Sandra Oh plays her that way, and it's... yeah, that's how I became a fan of her, for sure.
Yeah, Sandro, I mean, I will always remember her from Princess Diaries because that was my introduction to her. She has a super small role as the high school principal.
But she's good.
But she makes it incredibly memorable.
And funny.
I will quote one of her 6 lines from that movie still. Yeah. I mean, we're also big fans of that movie. Maybe that will be a different podcast. Just us
it
defending
can be on
Anne
our
Hathaway.
Mandy Moore podcast.
Please, sir, may I have some Mandy Moore. But yeah, and to me, to see her in a kids movie where she stands out and she's so funny and so interesting, acting against, you know, Julie Andrews, and then see her career and the way it's sort of gone over the last, how long has it been since that movie? 20 years. is really interesting. And I mean, the interviews with Sandra Oh about this show have been so fascinating. And please, if you ever want to come on this podcast, I promise we can record somewhere that's not my basement. But it's wild because she makes this show so, so good.
Yeah.
And the fact that she hasn't had that opportunity necessarily before and that she hasn't just been offered every amazing film and TV role is like such an injustice. It kind of shows how for a person of color in the industry, especially an Asian woman, these roles have not necessarily been available accessible to them before.
I mean, even Grey's Anatomy, I'm sure the reason that she booked that is because they did colorblind casting. That's something I think Shonda Rhimes does for all her shows. I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, so that gave her that amazing opportunity.
I mean, we also haven't mentioned Sandra Oh is a Canadian actor, which for us is like very exciting.
Hey-o.
Us little Toronto babies. And she studied in Montreal at the National Theater School. So I will always be starstruck because Lee Riefenbach, who was like an acting teacher when we were kids and directed the theater, New Brunswick Theater School, went to school with her. And I will never get over that. And
nor should you.
I don't know that they were friends or are in any way in contact anymore, but I just remember hearing that and being like, oh, she's a real actor. Mm-hmm. She trained classically, theatrically. Mm-hmm. Like, she's the real deal.
She is the real
deal. And I think that's always like lent a respect towards her and her craft, not just a movie star or TV star, but like, she's an actor.
Well, even Killing Eve, which she has the title role, if you were to watch that with a different actor, I'm not saying they wouldn't do a good job, but it takes a very specific kind of actor to take those lines in that role, which is supposed to be the more like boring, straight person role. Like, Villanelle is the fun, exciting,
dramatic.
I feel like with almost any other actor, we would only be talking about the actor who plays Villanelle. But because Sandra Oh is so good and so interesting and plays these characters just so real and honest, she's my favorite part.
She's so good and so compelling and so, I mean, I feel like I overuse that word on this podcast, but it's because of these performances.
Yeah.
They draw you in. And we can say Sandra Oh has been nominated for an Emmy for this performance, which is
because of this podcast.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, listeners. I don't know how we did it, but I guess it happened. But like, that is huge. And it's made Emmy history. And it's so well-deserved. And I know people also feel like Jodie Comer deserves nominations because her performances on this show are amazing. And I feel like it's sort of a Tatiana Maslany thing where she's not nominated for this season, but if Killing Eve has a few more seasons, she will be for sure. But it's so exciting that Sandra Oh has been nominated. And I can't wait to do some kind of Emmy spectacular.
Yeah.
And she better win.
Ooh, and Jodie Comer, if you want to know how good of an actress she is, go on Netflix, watch another BBC series called 13, about a girl who returns home after being captured for 13 years. Because she plays, it's like night and day from this Villanelle character, and I can't believe that she has this kind of range. I mean, I know really good actors do, but it's so impressive.
And she's so young, too. Yeah. It's kind of mind-boggling. Even just hearing interviews where she just has her normal British accent, I'm like, You're a different person.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so inspiring. Okay, on to segments.
All right.
We could gush forever. Sandra Oh, we love you. You're excellent. Thank you for doing this part so well. First segment, dun-dun-dun, top line. So what were your top favorite lines of the episode? I mentioned there weren't as many jokes in this one.
Mm-hmm. I only wrote down one.
All right, let's hear it.
It's when Villanelle is talking to her handler or whatever.
Constantine.
And she talks about how she is having a vacation in Berlin and, like, things to do. And then she goes, the Jewish Museum? That is massively poignant.
Massively poignant.
It's the way she says it. It's her accent. It's the fact that she is such a devious murderer. I can't even tell.
Going to a Holocaust museum?
I can't even tell if she's kidding or telling the truth, and it doesn't matter. She's also eating a burrito or something while she says it. Yeah, it's just so good.
I also had that one written down because it's so funny. It's, and so out of...
It's so funny. And if you don't understand why it's so funny, just go rewatch it because you will.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I put down a couple other ones. I really, really loved Bill's line when they're talking about his past and his sexual history. And he says, I just fall in love with whoever I fall in love with.
Yeah.
And he says it so sweet and so genuinely. And he's basically saying, like, pre-Janelle Monáe's announcement, like, I'm a pansexual. But he's just saying it in a way that's so accessible and easy. And we've talked on previous episodes of this podcast about how progressive the show is in so many ways and how the queer representation is, like, very integrated in a normal way. It's not just flashy. It's not necessarily just queer baity. It's kind of in there.
Yeah.
And for him to say this, a character who we already love and we didn't necessarily know that about before, I just, it like made me tear up.
Oh,
it's so sweet. I'm too emotional. And then the other line I had was from when Bill and Eve are at the site of the murder, of the hit, and they're being told what happened, and the guy's explaining it, and he says, his balls were, I don't know the word, and Bill and Eve in unison say, clamped. Which is just so funny. So, so, so funny.
So, even though he's not American, it feels like such an American. Clamped.
Clamped, totally. I think that was my favorite line of the ep.
That's
so
great.
Next segment, top ship. Top ship. So, Adele, do you know what it means to ship people, two people?
No.
Okay. I'm going to try to explain. I'm an old millennial. I don't know how to say this properly. So, shipping someone is like two characters who you love and wish were in a relationship or want to be in a relationship.
Oh, like relationship.
I think that's where it comes from.
That's for sure.
Youths, please explain to me if I'm wrong. I would love to know. But it, a lot of times it happens with shows that have really big fandoms, whether or not the characters are necessarily together. They're kind of hinting at it. People will be like, oh, I ship these people. Happens with YouTubers a lot. Like, I ship these two YouTubers together. So with that in mind, who is your top ship of this relation of this episode? I will go first.
Yeah, you go.
For me, this episode, it's all Bill and Eve. Mm-hmm. And part of me, I'm sure, is saying that because it's Bill's last episode and that's my last chance. But we get an insight into their friendship and their relationship in a deeper, more vulnerable way than we have before. We've seen them banter. We've seen them challenge each other. But here, like, he's sitting on her hotel bed and they're talking about their sex lives and who they've loved. And
they're gabbing.
It's just so sweet. And it just reminds me of, like, great friends I've had in my life and, like, what that close friendship is like.
Yeah. I also wrote Bill and Eve, but then I didn't know if I wrote the wrong thing because I don't see them together not sexually romantically. Yeah. But in the way that we are romantic as friends, like, just, like, caring and...
Totally.
And, yeah.
Like, a deep, deep friendship can be very intimate.
Yeah.
And we see that intimacy, I think.
Yeah. So I definitely wrote the same thing.
Great.
And I stand by it.
All right. We win. Okay.
Ship.
Last top of the ep. Top kill / kill count. So I think, if I'm correct, the kill count is only two.
Yeah.
And one of them happens right away, and the other one is a major character, and that's wild. So of the two kills, we have the fake nurse Dom kill of Fat Panda, and then we have Bill's kill.
Yeah.
What would you say is your top kill of the ep?
It's Bill.
Oh, I feel differently. Because I think I hate that Bill was killed and murdered, and it makes me so sad.
But it's so good.
It is.
It's such good TV.
But also, I think the other murder is more like creative and weird and entertaining. I think there's more entertainment value. Although you could argue it's entertaining to watch a beloved character be killed. Yeah. For me, that's like not, I don't want to look at it.
Oh,
so it's not the top for me.
Yeah, I'm the opposite for sure. I felt like I was much more, even though it was terrible and I was like, no, Bill. I was much more satisfied by his death because
you're engaged and the stakes are higher,
maybe? The stakes are higher and she's really, like when she's killing the other guy, she gets satisfaction out of it, obviously. That's her thing.
The old stare in the eye. Old
suck the life out of you. But she is still performing a job, a task that she was told to do. Whereas this is like, so it feels so like primal and like,
oh yeah,
dark. And the way she stabs him, even, I don't even know what she's stabbing him with.
Yeah, it must be such a small blade because we don't see
it's,
anything,
and it's just so fast, and I don't see that very much on television or anywhere, thank God. So I was just like, like I felt so many more feelings watching that kill.
Totally. Listeners, let us know which was your top kill and why.
Top Kill Bill.
Bye bye. Okay, that brings us to our next segment, which is, of course, bum 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 bum, Eve mail. So today's question is specifically about this episode, and it comes from Jess, who on Twitter is at Edwardisms, if you would like to give Jess a follow. The question says, my question is regarding the scene with Villanelle at the train station in episode 3. We know that Villanelle planned for Bill to follow her to the nightclub. However, do you think that there was an element of surprise in Villanelle the moment Bill grabbed her before boarding the train and asked about the scarf? This may have been feigned because Villanelle is good at masking feelings, but she almost looked hypnotized as she watches Eve get on board, and it looks like she wants to go get on board following her. It's like Bill grabbing her snaps her out of looking at Eve. So that's the question. Which is very interesting because we kind of touched on this when we were talking about the plot. I don't know. How premeditated do you think the club murder was?
I don't know for sure, obviously, because I didn't write it, and I don't know.
Wait, whoa.
Oh, is that the only reason you asked
Yes!
me?
Yes! Oh, how embarrassing.
Oh, God. Well, I'll just finish. We're almost done.
It's fine. I'll just re-record this episode.
Oh, of course. Right. So I'll never know for sure unless someone tells me, and I wonder if it is up to interpretation, but I am of the mind that it was all planned because of the way she bumps into Bill earlier in the episode, because I know she doesn't really have an intention at this point to kill Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And because she wasn't conspicuous, like she knows how to be inconspicuous, mm-hmm. and she was conspicuous.
Totally.
In both situations. So if she actually wanted to be more coy about that, there are so many ways she could have done it, and she doesn't. And she does stare at Eve for a long time, but she also could have gotten onto the train before she does. Like,
totally.
She really takes her time, and that is another reason I think she's waiting.
Well, it's almost like she wants Bill to see her looking at Eve,
mm-hmm.
because that is obviously something he would and does clock,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I tend to side more towards that just because she is so good at what she does.
Yeah, she's
and we've
not
seen it
dumb.
Time and time again. And although I do think Eve has the ability to throw her, as we see in future episodes, mm-hmm. I mean, the finale is a very good example of that. I don't know that at this point it would let her get that far off track.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for the question, Jess.
Off train tracks.
Oh my gosh, the puns are endless. Hope y'all love that. You can send in your Eve mails to spillingeve@gmail.com or send us a DM on Twitter or Instagram @spillingeve. We want your questions. We want your thoughts. Are we way off base? Is there a line that you think stands out in a certain episode that we didn't touch on? Send it in.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is a fan podcast. We want to get down to the fans. All right. That brings us to our final segment of the show.
Ooh.
Which is, of course, Confirm the Kill, aka plugs.
Oh,
So, Miss Adele, where can people find you? Where can they follow your budding career, your work?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Adele Dix. That is my last name. It's not a juke.
Great joke, though.
What else? I don't know. You can come see me perform with the Sketchersons, a.k.a. Sunday Night Live at Comedy Bar every Sunday at 9:30 p.m.
In Toronto.
In Toronto. We have a new host every week, and it's pretty fun. All new original show every week. Do I do anything else?
I mean, you do a lot. You're in an episode of Yoga 101, which is a CBC that is true. Comedy web series we were both in.
Well, and Christy created it.
All right. And you can be seen in lots of shorts
sometimes
and sketches.
I'm on commercials. If you're young, maybe you saw me in a Mother's Against Drunk Driving movie at your high school.
Yeah.
And you were probably like, that girl's old.
You're playing a teenager and you were like 27 when you played the part.
Yeah.
Guys, this industry's weird. I'm going to check in one last time with producer Chris. Did you get Nico's height at any point?
Not available.
Oh, he's not famous enough.
Or he's trying to bury it. Because men are insecure about their heights, especially
he's
in this industry.
He's clearly tallish. He's obviously like 5'8 at least.
I mean, if anyone has the inside scoop, if you work on the Killing Eve set and you can just sort of like amble up to him with a weird measuring tape.
Is the wardrobe on IMDb? Can we find its height?
How tall is that wardrobe? Get us
it just looks
this
like
info.
Comically large.
Okay, anyway. Little killers, until next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.